Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Welcome to Red Storm Chasers. I'm Vincent here with Craig, Tim, and Nick. Big week for St. John's basketball. We're going to take a look at where we stand in both the NCAA tournament hopes and in the Big East tournament setup. Guys, good to be back on the pod with you.
Great to be back on the pod and great to see all the victories that St. John's has been having since I've been out. So great to be back.
It's been a nice time for victories for St. John's. Nick, good to see you again.
Yeah, it's been great. St. John's is, everything has fallen our way recently. And we're all back on the pod together, as Tim said. First time in a long time, so.
Yeah, it's nice to have us all back together. Get the band back together.
Get the band back together. Well, it is good. It is good to all be back. And it's an important time here for St. John's basketball. So let's start with the 10,000-foot view. Obviously, one game left in the regular season of the Big East season. Or of college basketball season, to be completely honest. But of all the Big East teams finished their season on Saturday, which will set up the standings for the Big East tournament, which is next week. We've got one more game. Our last game is home at Madison Square Garden on Saturday against Georgetown, which we'll get into a bit later. But taking the overhead look, obviously we've had good fortunes of winning back-to-back games or winning four games in a row. And on that journey, we've worked ourselves back up, currently tied for the five spot with Villanova and Providence heading into this last Georgetown game. And, you know, we are actually in a great spot in terms of where we're going to finish in the Big East. Better, I think, than some people thought at certain points during this season.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of left for dead after that Seton Hall game, to be completely honest. I mean, we talked about it here. It felt like it was a gut punch, you know. It felt like the season was really over, and what a difference a couple weeks make. I mean, we are now trending the correct way, and the tournament seems like it's a real possibility again.
So, all right, so let's take a look at the tie-breaking scenarios and the standings that are likely for the Big East tournament. Obviously, with only one game left, some things are set, but there is still a lot of movement, and a lot of the movement will involve us. The one seed's a lock. UConn, 17-2. They're the one seed. They can't be caught. On the bottom side, I'll do it easy, even though it's top and bottom. DePaul is locked in at the 11, and Georgetown is locked in at the 10. So those cannot change. So 1, 10, 11, all set. All right. So with the 1, the 10, and the 11 locked, the first interesting tiebreaker scenario comes in at the 2 and 3. Creighton and Marquette both come in 13-6 into their last game. Creighton will play at Villanova. Marquette will play at Xavier. Obviously, if one team wins and the other loses, the winning team will be the 2. The losing team will potentially be the 3 because Seton Hall has kept themselves high up in the standings. They come into Saturday 12-7. So a chance to get to 13 wins and a chance to be involved in the fray of the tiebreaker. So play out the scenarios a little bit just because it will have an impact in terms of how the seeding around us takes place. So say Creighton loses, right? And Seton Hall wins. Creighton holds a tiebreaker over Seton Hall, so that wouldn't really be an issue. Say Marquette were to win, then Marquette would be the 2, Creighton would be the 3, Seton Hall would be the 4. If Marquette loses and Seton Hall wins, that's when things get interesting. Marquette split with Seton Hall. So the second tiebreaker in the Big East is wins against the highest position opponent. So technically, it's kind of who has the best win, which in this case would be Seton Hall. Seton Hall beat UConn. So Seton Hall is in a good spot if Marquette is in the mix because of that win against UConn. So say all three of them lose. Because of that win against UConn, if Seton Hall comes up against Marquette, they're going to find themselves in the 3 spot instead of the 4. If Creighton and Marquette were to both lose and Seton Hall were to win, unfortunately for Seton Hall, they, because of their 2 losses against Creighton and Creighton and Marquette having split with each other, they would remain in the 4 and the 2 and 3 would actually remain the same. So Creighton would be the 2 and Marquette would be the 3. Some of this will come into play a little later. Now we get into the more interesting stuff for us, which is actually the only thing that matters. And that's where our seeding will be. Before we get into our tiebreak scenarios, I'll just give you guys the question. Where do you want to finish? What seed do you want here in the Big East tournament? Nick, we'll start with you.
I think I want to be, personally, I want to be the five seed this tournament. I understand that we'll play Seton Hall and then we'll go on to play Connecticut after that. But I would rather, one, avoid Wednesday, give us fresh legs on Thursday, give us an opportunity to play Seton Hall. Listen, Seton Hall mashed us twice. The one time it was in UBS Arena. The other time it was at The Rock, which we were terrible at. Let's get him at the Garden once. Let's see how we can do. We're a better team than we were before. Then we have a chance at Connecticut, right? So yep. That would be fun. Give us a chance when we both, you know, we both had to play one game rather than us having to play, you know, two games against, you know, Marquette or two games against to get the Creighton and stuff like that. That's my personal opinion.
It's an interesting look at it. I disagree, but I'll get to my point in a minute. Tim, what do you think?
So for my answer, it's two-sided to a point. I'm going to say the five, but that's strictly because I don't want to put bad juju out there, say the six, and us lose to Georgetown.
I see what you're saying, except we can win and still end up in the six, and I'll explain how that happens in a little bit.
No, I get that. But I know if I say anything lower than what we can be right now, I feel like I'm going to bring on bad juju. So,
all right, fair enough, Tim. So you give it a – all right, understandable. Craig, what do you think?
So my thought process is I think the six. I think the six would be the sweet spot for us. Obviously, beating Georgetown is part of this. I mean, if you don't beat Georgetown, then it all doesn't really matter. So I think – the six is a good spot because you get to match up with DePaul at the sixth seed, which is a game 100% going to win, which is good. Gets us 20 wins. That's an important number, I think. It would be helpful. Then you're going to play the three, which could be either Creighton or Marquette, depending on how it all breaks out. But that's a one opportunity for us in a game we can win.
That could also be Seton Hall, by the way.
It could be Seton Hall. I would prefer it to be Marquette or Creighton, frankly, in my opinion, because I think if we get to be the six, if we get DePaul, we beat DePaul, I think we're in really good shape. And the quad opportunity is kind of a buffer. If we're the five, we have to win that Seton Hall game. And that's a much harder degree of difficulty game than the DePaul game. And if we lose that game, we are going to sweat it out on Selection Sunday.
I think similarly to Craig, I think we are better off ending up as the six seed than we are as the five seed. I don't want to be on the same side of the bracket as UConn. Part of it's that. Part of it is we don't get as many quad one opportunities there. And for me, I think we're in a good spot for the tournament. I just think the more quad one opportunities we get, the better off we are, right? And since these count as home games, Seton Hall is not going to be a quad one opportunity. So you're already starting off minus one on the quad one opportunities. You're only ever going to get two quad one opportunities, theoretically, if you're in the five spot and you win the championship. You would have one against UConn in round two, and maybe if UConn gets upset, you don't get that. But again, these are possible. You would get UConn the next round, and then you would theoretically get a game against Marquette or Creighton, which are the only three games that get us quad one opportunities in this tournament. So that's why I think the six. I think Craig's right. You get a DePaul game that gets us to 20. That's a good check mark.
It's only good in number, though, just because it's 20, not because, like, beating DePaul does nothing. Again, we talked about it a million times.
Beating DePaul increased our net by four spots.
I think it's because of other play of everybody else, because a couple other teams.
There's other games going on Saturday, too. Next week.
But if they win, they're playing an opponent that's probably much higher than DePaul, who's what, 300?
Probably not necessarily. Remember, most of the bubble teams end up in the middle of their conference as well. They end up playing more middle of the pack teams, depending on how the tournament format lays out.
Yeah, DePaul is, again, a historically terrible team. They're in the 300s. We're talking about
it. So it's a layup of a win.
It's a layup of a win, but it's a nothing. It's a net zero.
Yeah, but if you have someone lose. Right, so Wake Forest. Let's say
Wake Forest. It's nothing. I get it. It's just making sure that you move on another game. You get a 20, and then you know you don't lose the possibility that another team loses.
No, my bigger thing is you get to 20. Not only that, we now have the opportunity to get three quad one wins. We could get a win against either Creighton or Marquette, hopefully in the three spot. That's a quad one. The next round would be the other team, Marquette or Creighton. That's likely a quad. That's going to be a quad one. And then you could get UConn in the final. That's three opportunities of quad one wins. Play this out. If you're looking at a St. John's team not with 20 wins, you're looking at a St. John's team with 23 wins, having three quad one wins in the last week.
And winning the Big East tournament.
And winning the Big East tournament, sure. But just what I'm saying is play it out.
Going through UConn, we would still be almost as high, if not the same amount of seed we would be.
No, no, absolutely not.
Everybody's going to be like, listen, they went through the DePaul in the first round, which is nothing. And then you're right. We'll have to go through Creighton, Marquette, unless there's an upset, and UConn, unless there's an upset.
Right.
But you'll have to still either go through you'll have to go through UConn and Marquette or Creighton. You're losing one game.
My point is, you could end up, you could end up as like a,
which is better, which is,
you could end up like a seven seed. DePaul's team. You can end up like a seven seed.
My, I guess the question really comes
17 in either way. Because if you're talking about winning the Big East tournament, you're going to end up a 7 seed either way. Absolutely.
We're not getting to a 7 seed.
If we win the Big East tournament? Big East tournament?
No shot.
We're probably not ending up in a 7 seed. If we
win the Big East tournament, beating Marquette and UConn, we're beating them for possibly one or two team in the country.
Regardless of that, if you win it, you're saying if you win it on the other side, there's just not as impressive of wins. That's all it is. And by the way, the reason you want the impressive opportunities is because when you don't win the Big East tournament, you at least have had the opportunities, and it's a quad one loss. Part of the reason we're so high in the net is because we have so many quad one games that our losses are not bad. We have nine quad one losses.
If we beat Seton Hall, it's significantly better than beating DePaul and then losing to Marquette or Creighton.
We won't have 20 wins. I'm telling you, we won't have 20 wins. We'll sweat it more if we lose to Seton Hall on Thursday.
If we beat Seton Hall, we would have 20 wins.
The question is
that, sure, beating Hall is better than beating DePaul. That's not the question.
No, the question is this. The question is beating Seton Hall and only beating Seton Hall enough to lock a tournament bid?
Right.
I mean, if the contra to that is beating DePaul and only DePaul and then getting a chance at Marquette and Creighton, you're saying the same thing.
No.
You're talking about one game. You're talking about getting one game and then getting a chance at a quad one in both sides of the bracket.
Here's a scenario, Nick. The reason why I say this is because you're getting into DePaul. It's fine. Check the box. You're getting to 20. I think we have a better chance to beat either Marquette or Creighton than we do to beat UConn. There's a real possibility we can beat them. A, because we beat Creighton and we lost to them by one. B, Marquette, we led at the half in both games. So we lost by 1 point at the Garden and we led by 13 at the half in Marquette. We can win both games. UConn, we played them close when they didn't have Klingon, and the second time really wasn't that close. The odds of us beating UConn in the biggest tournament are, in my opinion, I pray to God it happens, but I think it's very small. The option, the potential of us to beat Creighton or Marquette is a real chance. If we beat Seton Hall, is that enough? If we beat Seton Hall and then lose to UConn, is that enough?
I think 100%, because we're also knocking out another bubble team. 100%.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's just enough, and I think it's enough. I do agree with you that it's enough, but it's close. And if we beat Seton Hall, lose to UConn, we're gonna sweat. If the other way around, if we were to get Marquette or Creighton and we were to beat them, we would win. If we would be in. If we beat those teams, we're in. And if we were to beat UConn, obviously we're in. But right. If we beat DePaul, we will 100% sweat it. We will sweat it out too, 100%. I don't disagree with you on that.
I do agree with you that Marquette and Creighton are better matchups than UConn. I agree.
That's it. I also think we don't match up as well against Seton Hall. Nothing ever goes well against Seton Hall. Tell me a Seton Hall game in the past 10 years, with the exception of the one we played at Walsh Gym, that went our way. I mean, let's avoid Seton Hall and UConn are the two teams I'd love to avoid. Let's keep them on the other side of the bracket. And we have a clear opportunity to do that. That's why I think the six is better.
The downside is it's not likely.
The downside is it's hard. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about what it's likely going to happen. So obviously right now, 5, 6, and 7 are all tied. That's us, Nova, and Providence all have the same record. And fortunately for us, it's kind of a simple scenario, right? If everybody wins, everything stays constant, we're going to stay in the 5. Villanova stays in the 6. Providence stays in the 7. If Providence loses and us and Villanova both win, we remain in the 5. Villanova remains in the 6. And then obviously Providence had lost, so they had gone down. They'll stay in the seven. Things get interesting if everybody loses, right? St. John's loses, Villanova loses, and Providence loses, but Xavier wins. In that scenario, good for us. We end up in the five again. So as you can see, the five is becoming very likely for us to occur. In that scenario, the six and seven and eight seeds are a bit more of a mix. But for St. John's purposes, if we all lose and Xavier wins, that's good for us. The real question becomes when we win and Nova loses, but Providence wins, and we remain in just a tie with just Providence, then what happens is Providence jumps us. Providence moves to the five, we get to the six, and then Villanova or Xavier, depending on what happens in the top seeds, they end up in the seven or eight. So for us, the most likely scenario is we're going to end up five. If we win,
overwhelmingly, right?
Right. If we win, we end up in the five. That's very, very clear. It's only if there's a scenario where Villanova loses, if that we could get a chance at being a six.
If we win and Nova loses and the Providence wins, we're the six, right?
Say that again.
Yeah. If we win,
Nova loses
and, yes, and Providence wins, we're the six.
We're right? the six. Correct. The other scenario, though, is if Nova wins and we both lose, Providence and St. John's, then we're the six. However, if Xavier joins that,
seven?
No, because Nova would jump us to be the five.
Right, but don't we don't hold a tiebreaker.
I'm sorry, you're right. I'm sorry. We would be the seven. You're right. I'm sorry. We would be the seven. Providence would be the six. So that's the scenario where that's as low as we can get. The lowest we can get is seven. When that's how we get there is if Nova wins, right, and St. John's and Providence both lose. Because then we get a tiebreaker with Providence, which we lose every time.
Yeah, so basically all we're really hoping for is Providence. I mean, well, I guess it depends what you're rooting for.
It depends what you're rooting for. But the answer is if we win, the most likely scenario is that we end up as the five. Yeah, only if Nova loses. Now, listen, Nova's playing a tough game. They're playing against Creighton at home.
No, Nova, I mean, so really, really what matters is that Providence is playing UConn.
Right.
Correct. If UConn beats Providence, we're the five. Period.
Correct. Correct. Yes, that's correct.
If they win, that's the only thing then all the things start kicking
then
in.
Then things start kicking in.
Yeah. Well, we should go back a second. If UConn beats Providence and we win, then it doesn't matter and we remain the five. Because if we lose to Georgetown and Providence loses to UConn and Villanova wins, then we're not.
No, sure.
I'm talking about the world that we win.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I know, but you do leave yourself open to the variables of losses too. Now, obviously you hope that doesn't happen, but, so again, most likely we're going to be the five. Very unlikely we end up anywhere else.
Right.
But six, we could even get down to seven. The hope is that doesn't happen. But
likely five, which means we play 2:30 on Thursday.
2:30 on Thursday against. Now here's the deal. Again, it most likely against Seton Hall.
But no,
could however end up playing Marquette in that game as well. There's a scenario where they lose to Xavier and Seton Hall wins against DePaul, which is likely. Where they could own the tiebreaker, but again that involves that involves Marquette losing at Xavier, which isn't out of the realm of possibility, but.
I'd be okay with that, then.
Most likely not going to happen. I'd be okay with that, too. But anyway, then we would go on. As I said, UConn locked into the one. They'll play the noon game on Thursday. We wouldn't play a Wednesday matchup as the five, just a reminder to everybody. We would only play Thursday at 2:30. We our first game.
We don't get to be Wednesday Warriors this year?
No. Nah, well, if we finish in the five, we don't.
Maybe.
UConn is the one seed. They'll play at noon against the winner of the 8-9 game. Now, the 8-9 game is likely to be Xavier Butler, so they'll play one of those teams. Actually, that's a pretty tough matchup, to be honest, because those are both good teams, but UConn's playing very well, so it's going to be UConn to advance to Friday. All right, now that we see, we're likely going to end up in the five. Obviously, Nick, you'd like to play Seton Hall over Marquette?
Oh, no. I would rather play Marquette. No? I would rather play Marquette in this scenario. I just don't see a scenario where they drop to the four.
Well, they could. I mean, a loss to Xavier and a win by Seton Hall. It gets in there.
I just don't think they lose to Xavier. Maybe they do.
I actually, now I'm thinking about this, I think I actually might be better off with Seton Hall.
Because if we change of heart,
because why? If we get Marquette in the 4-5 game and we don't win, then we're in serious trouble.
Tim, who would you rather play, Seton Hall or Marquette?
I mean, I want Seton Hall just because I want to beat them at the Garden. It's more of an ego thing.
Love fair. It.
All right. Fair
those,
enough.
Those damn New Jerseyans.
No.
I'd rather play Marquette. I don't want to see Seton Hall. I think they've got our number, and they have for a while, and I don't want to put it to a test in a game that could likely decide our outcome for the NCAA tournament. Which is why I'd prefer to be in the 6, but if we're going to be in the 5, let it be Marquette. Again, doesn't seem likely, but we'll see what happens. All right, now that we've taken a look at the Big East tournament, let's talk about where we stand in terms of the NCAA tournament. Obviously, I mentioned after the Paul win that Nick gave no credit to, our net got a bounce. We're up to 34 in the net heading into our last game. Extremely high for... you know, where we're at. Again, I think the quad one losses is kind of, I know that's a weird stat, but only 3 of our losses come outside of quad one, which is why you find us higher in the net than most other teams. Also, our strength of schedule is very good. But I think that's part of it. Taking a look at the bracket matrix, Craig's favorite website and our go-to analysis here, they have us as an 11. You know, most people have us in. Joe Lenardi, that bum, still hasn't sent out another bracket since Tuesday. So I know he updates on his Twitter. And on his Twitter, he has said that we have, with the win and the way things have broken down. By the way, we've been having a great external week. For the past 2 weeks, to be honest, we have been having spectacular external weeks. We've had Wake Forest losing and Virginia's losing and TCU's falling apart, whatever. It's been Ole Miss's and it's Ole been Miss great. Losing. Yeah. It's been great for us.
I also love seeing like Utah also in like the last 4 because you know they got to put us just above them every time because we beat them.
Well, the other thing is Utah keeps winning, so that's good for us. But yeah, no, we've had great help so far, and let's hope that that continues. So yeah, Bracket Matrix has us as an 11. Lenardi, again, he had us at his first team out on Tuesday, but he has since updated that, and we've moved our way in, and New Mexico has slid out, actually, because of a loss. Wake Forest slid out, and Providence is now the first team out. Looking around.
Losing to Nova.
Because they lost to Nova.
Nova saw that a bunch, too. Nova getting into the quad one, it changes the scenario for us a lot, too.
Huge help.
Because now we have 5 quad one wins. And 5 quad one wins is one of the better records. We have more quad one wins than most teams in the country. And with our metrics, those numbers look really good.
Yeah, I mean, our strength of schedule with the quad one wins, it's, again, it's going to be hard to keep us out. As long as we don't completely blow it, right? If we win this Georgetown game, even if we just win this Georgetown game, to be completely honest, depending on the game we play, I mean, obviously a loss in a game against DePaul or something like that in the tournament could blow up your spot. But if we win just this Georgetown game, it could be pretty hard to keep us out based on our numbers. I'm not saying they won't. We're St. John's. They'll find a way. But,
but it's Rick Pitino, St. John's. I don't know. We got different juice than
we have. Yeah, I mean, before. Listen, you are right. You are right. Rick Pitino certainly gets more looks than everybody else.
The people want to see. They want to see the suits.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. Just to give you an idea of teams to keep an eye out for, obviously, because on Saturday, there's a whole lot of games. You know, almost everybody plays. So, you know, Wake Forest is, again, we've mentioned them. They're a team you want to keep an eye on in terms of wanting them to lose. Same goes for Pitt. Same goes for Virginia. Now, Pitt's a little further away, but we don't need them creeping back in, right? So there's some teams who are right around us who you obviously want to lose because, you know, this way you can get a jump ahead of them. There's other teams that you just don't want creeping back in the picture. UNLV got a great win against San Diego State. That's not great for us, right? That's another team kind of creeping their way up when we don't really need that. Wake Forest is a team you're rooting against. Pitt's a team you're rooting against. Utah, obviously, is a team you're rooting for, but only to the extent that it doesn't interfere with us, right?
Yeah, we don't want them winning like the Pac-12 champion.
No, we don't want
because that steals a direct bid. Like they're absolutely getting in that way.
We just need them to stay below 50 in the net. Correct. Anything else, I don't care. They can be 49th. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I just, just need to stay above 50 so we keep that quad one win.
Absolutely. Seton Hall is a team that you're – at this point, after their win against Nova, I think they're most likely going to be in. I don't think they're going to be too close. They'll probably be like – they'll stick around the last four buys, but I don't think – we're in a
It's crazy that they're there to be.
They should absolutely be. And now the problem is their net. Yeah, their problem is their net's just so high.
Just look at the.
Listen, I'm with you. The only answer I have is that their strength of schedule is poor. And it comes down to their non conference strength of schedule, because their non conference strength of schedule is in the 223.
True. You know what the other problem is? And this is, there was a conversation about this, how the Big 12 is a game in the system. Part of it is that Seton Hall, the way they style they play, they don't run up scores on bad teams.
Yes.
They generate close games, so that keeps their numbers low.
Yeah.
That's some big brain stuff, but I'm just saying. But if, because like they talk about how like Iowa State and BYU played a whole bunch of really bad teams and drilled them by like 50. So their efficiency numbers went super high, which kept their nets high. And that's how they've been gaming the system to keep all their net. Once you get high in the net, then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that when you play high net teams and you stay high.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's something to keep in mind as the Big East schedulers. Virginia, I said as well, that's a team we're certainly rooting against. New Mexico is a team you're rooting against. Colorado is a team that's fallen off a bit, but it's still a group you're rooting against. Michigan State to a lesser extent. They've had some recent stumbles, but again, not you. Those are guys all you want to root against. Colorado, you want to root against. Iowa, Nebraska, Northwestern. So you want to keep an eye partially on these guys, mainly just to make sure that they don't block us. Right? Sure. That's really all you can do, because you know, as much as they impact us, they sort of don't. We are in a very good spot, I think, in my opinion, in that we very much control our own destiny. A win against Georgetown and one win in the Big East tournament is more than enough. We may even be able to get in with just a win against Georgetown.
Yeah.
I
agree. I think the other thing you need to watch out for in championship week is bid stealers, because the bubble shrinks, the harder it gets to get in. So teams like Indiana State, we need them to win. Teams like Dayton, teams that are going to be in the field anyway. St. Mary's, we can't have any surprises in some of the mid-major conferences. Vincent mentioned UNLV. Like, you know, they're going to have 16 from the Mountain West. We don't need a 7th in UNLV getting hot.
Right, they host the tournament.
So, you know, we need – that's the other thing to watch. That's the other thing. That's what we need to worry about too. Because if the bubble shrinks, then maybe we didn't do it. And then all of a sudden it gets smaller and smaller. So we'll see. It will be – certainly will be a tense and worry-filled next few days.
Absolutely, it's going to be. Now, you know what – I can say this. You know what would make this less sweat would be if they expand the NCAA tournament like they've talked about doing. Now I'm an anti expansion. I think the NCAA tournament has reached the point where it is perfection. We just leave it alone. Just let it be. We don't need to do anything extra. Just for once in sports, just please God, just don't touch it. Just let it be 68. Just the way it is. We've got the first four. It's great. You get two bonus games on Tuesday and Wednesday before the tournament. No one really cares about the 16 games unless they end up being good. You get one or two good games, and those games have been good. It's not like the first four games have been bad.
Yeah,
those games have routinely been good games. I don't understand why at every time when it comes time when we have something really good, we just blow it up. It's like college football playoffs. College football overtimes. Like, you had a perfect system, and then you change it to now we're doing 2-point conversions after the third one. It's like, we didn't need to do that. I don't hate that, but again, we didn't need to do that. Just like, again, spanning the tournament, I may not hate it, but we don't need to do it. Just leave it alone.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Vincent. I don't think it's really – we don't need to expand it. I kind of like that. What is it? It's originally it was 64 teams, and there's 32 conferences, right?
Yeah.
So basically half of the conferences half the bids are already locked in. And then you kind of got half at large. I kind of like, one, the simplicity of that, two, the I mean, now it's 68, so it's a little bit more.
But... Yeah, I mean, it's a little more, but it is still mainly split based on the number of conferences. I'm with you. I think that,
and I also think, like, if you expand it more, you're just going to allow more for, like, power conference teams to get lesser teams in rather than Cinderella teams in, because they're just going to fill in the teams that they think they want to see, and it's not going to be, like, the lower conferences that we actually want to see.
Absolutely. I mean, how many bubble teams end up being duds, right? And you could see where now we're just going to be letting in, because you're right, Nick. It's not like we're going to take extra Richmonds of the world.
Right.
If that was the guarantee, by all means, I'd love to see more Mountain West and A-10 teams face off against big teams. But you know it's going to be more Iowas of the world, right? It's going to be more Virginias and more stupid teams.
Yeah, whoa, whoa, SEC. Whoa.
First of all, the Big East is a premier conference, okay? We don't associate ourselves with garbage conferences like the ACC or the Big Ten, okay?
That's fair.
We're premier, us and the Big 12, baby, ride into the sunset. The number one and number two basketball conferences.
So I'm going to go the opposite way on you guys. Look, I'm not going to say, like, I love the expansion. I think it's the best thing since, you know, it's the bee's knees over here. I just think that they're... is a reasonable reason for it. And I think a lot of it is unfortunate with the realignment the way it is. I think that the fear in the NCAA is that the bigger conferences, if they don't have enough access to it, if enough of their middle teams can't make a good enough record to get in, they're going to say, you know what, we're just going to do our own tournament. And that would be a death knell. And that is a massively huge problem. I think, look, we know that those schools, it's all about money. And money is the number one thing for them. And if they don't think they're getting... What?
It's about football money, baby.
It's about money, period. It is about money, period. If they didn't think the tournament made them money, if they don't get enough... So you get units based on how many teams you make and wins you get. If they don't get enough units, there's the fear. I'm telling you why they're talking about this. The reason why they're talking about this is this exact reason. They're afraid to do it.
For sure. It is.
But I'm going to give you two interesting points, because Joe Lenardi wrote an article about this, and I'm not a big Joe Lenardi fan, but this is super interesting. 68 teams is 18% of all Division I schools can make the tournament, right? The NCAA's guidelines for championships across all sports, they generally recommend access for 25% of the league of the teams participating schools to be part of the championship. So that's below the average. So that is because, remember, when it was 68, it was there was less schools. It's expanded over time, so now there's more schools. So I think my argument would be reasonable expansion. I'm not talking about 96. That's crazy. I'm talking about there. I've seen 76 or something like that, which would, you'd put more games on, same thing, just Tuesday and Wednesday. You wouldn't change Thursday and Friday, because the number one, there's two things I would protect against all costs. The Thursday and Fridays have to stay exactly the same. The first 2 days of the tournament cannot change in any way. The other thing is, you have to keep the automatic bids for all conferences and not throw all of them into playing games, because that would take away some of the allure.
Sure, but that's way more likely to happen in expansion. And first of all, 100%. What you're going to see is more automatic bid low conference schools playing games. That's what you're going to see. What they'll do is they'll make all of the 16s play-ins, first of all. That's going to be their first move, because what that does is that allows them to put more at-large bids to power conferences.
Maybe, although the 16 seeds don't get them the same ratings on the Tuesday and Wednesday that the 11 seeds get. So as a product for television... Care. They only care about the television product. Let's be completely honest.
The big conferences don't care. The big conferences don't care. They don't care because that money is peanuts. It's part of the units for them. They don't care. That doesn't matter to them. What matters to them is, like you said, getting teams in. And if they can get more teams in into the actual tournament, not into the play-in games, which is what they're going to care more about. Secondarily, Thursday and Friday are protected solely by the fact that television can't accommodate any more games. So it's very unlikely they're going to touch Thursday and Friday in any expansion format, simply because you cannot cram more games into it than there already are. So now listen, you may be able to add one or two.
You could add more networks.
You can't. The TV contract's locked up. It's locked up until 2030. Now, listen, I don't know the exact contract. I haven't read it. Right? There are networks out there that are part of Turner and part of CBS that could theoretically house games, but you would need that in somewhere in the contract, it would have to allow for that.
I'm okay with that 68. I love the tournament. I don't want it to change. I just, there's an existential problem if it happens.
I think
it is a problem.
My bigger point,
it takes one of those conferences to be scumbags, and then
my bigger thing is trouble. I think it's a false threat. It's a false threat by the bigger conferences.
Fox already tried to put together a tournament to overtake the NIT with only the Big East and the Big 12 and the Mountain West.
For sure. But that's
already happened.
Yes, but that is what? That is a secondary conference tournament. I mean, sorry, that's a secondary postseason tournament. The thing that keeps the NCAA tournament alive is the fact that it pays for all of the other championships. So the answer is the SEC, as much as they may only want to play in a conference where all of their teams get in, they don't want to have to figure out how to pay for the women's gymnastics championship. They don't want to have to figure out how to pay for the women's soccer tournament. They don't want to have to pay for the men's soccer tournament champions. Right, those NCAA tournament championships are what I'm talking about. That's all paid for. All of them, all of the other sports championships are paid for by the NCAA basketball tournament money. So yeah. The money the NCAA gets from that, use it. And the answer is for them, because they're so football-centric, it's easier to have somebody else deal with all the other sports because then they don't have to. I don't have to worry about it. It just gets it out of my – it's a headache I no longer need, which is why, to me, I think it's a false threat. I think it's something that they like to flirt with because for them, yeah, sure, why not? It sounds great. And they get more out of it, right? The more threats I make, the more I'm going to get. But in the end of the day, I just don't see them doing it. I just think the juice ain't worth the squeeze. Because what are you going to do when the NCAA then goes, okay, that's fine. Your women's soccer team can no longer compete in NCAA.
They're going to have them compete against the SEC. They'll make a pact with the Big Ten. And they'll just say, we're going to compete against each other.
Maybe.
Sure.
If those schools – sure, what's the championship?
They'll have a championship between themselves. That's the whole point.
But there won't be a national – there'll be a national championship.
There'll be a national championship. Yeah, they will have their own championship. They will say, we are the national champion because we have the best schools, and that's why we're the national champion.
They can't because –
They absolutely can.
They can't because that's a trademarked –
It'll be like the beginning of the NIT and NCAA. They're both national championships.
I think. True. Look, here's the thing.
No, because they're not owned by the NCAA. They won't be able to call it a national championship.
The NIT was a national invitation.
The answer is, I think slight expansion helps to fend off any possibility that happens, and that not happening is extraordinarily important to me.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I disagree, but we'll see. Unfortunately, I don't get a vote, you know. So,
well, that's true. We're all just spectators here.
It's gonna be rough, though. I hope they don't ruin it. Anyway,
I agree. Just don't ruin it. Don't change the essence of it, no matter what you do. That's the other thing.
All right, let's talk about how we got to this spot where we now find ourselves likely to be a 5 seed in the Big East tournament. We continued our great run. We are on a 4-game winning streak. The first win that we've got to talk about is a great one for us at Hinkle. We overcame the Hinkle curse, so to speak. We came away with an 82-59 victory at Hinkle. You know, as much as people said Rick Pitino crossed the line when he called out the team, I don't know if I've ever seen anything work so well. You know, I mean, how many times have we played Butler and just knew we were going to lose in Hinkle? And this time it was just the exact opposite.
Yeah, no, we looked fantastic at Hinkle for once. Honestly, I don't remember ever playing well at any Coldfield House.
I mean, we looked locked in. It was a game, you know, we had to win. It's a tough place to play. Quad one win. We looked great. I mean, Glenn Taylor had a breakout game, and he was just great. And we talked about it actually in the last spot or two pods ago. I was saying I think he's going to be a major factor for us going forward, and I think –
He certainly was. 17 points, 5 of 7 from 3. I mean, those are great numbers. Not to mention, he's a defensive guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, those numbers don't come out on the stat sheet always. I mean, 3 steals is certainly on the stat sheet. But those numbers don't always come out when you're a defensive guy. And he lit it up on both in this particular game. Besides that, so he had double digits. RJ Lewis, we would be remiss to not mention him. He had 15 points, second highest scorer on the team. And then Chris Ledlam. Chris Ledlam has been playing great. 10 points for him, 3 of 7 from the field, 4 of 4 from the free throw line, which is what we love to see. We shot 91% from the free throw line in this game.
Love that for
us. Can't ask more than that. 34% from three, which is decent. 44% from the field. But I do think our defense is really what got us there. 59 points only for Butler. We held them under 40. They shot 39% from the field, which was great. It just, you know, this team has games like this where you look and you go, yeah, this team can do this. You know, this team can win the Big East tournament. This team can win against anybody. And I know, and Butler's a good team. You know, I just, yeah. It's unfortunate that we had a skid there in the middle of the season, because we easily could have been, you know, a top 7 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. I mean, hey, we're gelling together now, and it's, you know, that's part of the having so many new guys together. It's going to be messy sometimes. It's going to take time. And it was very messy, like you said, but hey, we're better for it now, I guess. We've been playing really good defense on the three. We've been playing really good defense all around, really, but in particular on the three.
Well,
I don't know. We just seem like a different team recently.
Certainly do. And this win helped us get there. We got to give a little shout out, Posh Alexander, 15 points for him. It was unfortunate. I saw somebody on Twitter, very funny, say that once again, St. John's ended Posh Alexander's chance at making the NCAA tournament, which I found to be funny because obviously we ended it the first 3 times when he was on the team. But
I do wish he got to get to the, I mean,
he earned it. I mean, he would have earned making it there. But I wish him all the best for sure. You never know. Listen, Butler's a good team. They could sneak in a few wins. I don't think they'll win the Big East tournament, but they could. Right, I guess any team can. So
they can go on a little Georgetown run.
That would be something, wouldn't it? Now, real before we get into the DePaul game, wouldn't it be something to watch DePaul go on a Georgetown run? 0 conference wins this year, then all of a sudden they just hit it hot, go out and win the Big East tournament. Wouldn't that be the story of college basketball?
Where do you think they'd seed them?
They would be like a 15. They'd have to be. They'd have to be like a 15.
They probably put in. You think they're putting lower than a 12? Actually,
yeah. I think you could put them lower. I think you'd have to put them. You have to put them lower than a 12. They only have
in that world. You're talking about probably going through Marquette, Creighton, and UConn or St. John's. You know, of
course. I think Georgia did this one time. They were terrible in the SEC, and then they won the tournament.
They did a few years ago. That absolutely.
They put them as like a 13 seed, I think.
Yeah, they'll probably put them, yeah.
Yeah, but Butler's even worse.
DePaul.
I'm sorry, DePaul.
DePaul's comp right now, if you look at the net, is Fairleigh Dickinson. Fairleigh Dickinson is ahead of them on the net.
Jesus.
Fairleigh Dickinson was a play-in 16, just for reminders last year. They won their conference tournament. They actually didn't win their conference tournament. Merrimack won their conference, was not allowed to play in their conference tournament. They were the 1 seed. FDU got the automatic bid by winning their tournament, and they were playing. So by that schedule, DePaul, if they won the Big East tournament, which will never happen, would be a 16. They won't do that to the Big East. They'll probably be a 14 or a 13, but I kind of think it would be funny to see, as long as they didn't beat us along the way. Anyway, we did beat them this week, scored the most points we've scored in 25 years, 104-77. Great win. Gave up a little, 77, a little high number to give up to DePaul, but I do think we had our foot a little too much on the gas there in the second half. 60% from the field, 52% from three. Absolutely spectacular numbers. However, our defense wasn't super great. 50% for them from the field, 58% from three for the Blue Demons. This was a game where, you know, if you tuned in for, well, I guess if you tuned in at the beginning, it was a little back and forth for a while.
Yeah, for a little while.
A little closer than you wanted it to be in the first half, or I should say the first half of the first half. And then we hit a run and we're up 54-28 half.
Yeah, it was senior night for them, so they came out with a little spark.
Just a little spark, though. turn it away and plowed through them.
One point of the DePaul game I want to talk about, too. Simeon Wiltshire came in when Jenkins went out with some early fouls, and Wiltshire looked really good.
Well, for this game, once again, Dingle, great performance. He also did, I mean, once, what was it, about 8 minutes in, we were up by just like two or something like that, and then went on a massive run that just continued on to the end of the game. Dingle dropped 19 points in 18 minutes. 8 for 10 shooting, 3 for 4 from 3. The shots didn't seem forced. They had many times where he was open, because as long as the hand's not in his face, that mid-range seems like it's automatic. And it was just good decision-making all the way through.
Yeah, Dingle's looked so much more confident in his shot, and he has looked like the player who was second in the country in scoring.
Absolutely. So just to give you some numbers here, over this past 4-game win streak, Dingle 17 points a game. He's 7 of 16 from 3. Spectacular. Right? That's the guy we thought we were getting when we got Jordan Dingle.
Yeah.
And he stepped up late, we've always said, or we said multiple times, we really lack a 3. We kind of need a third guy, and Dingle has been that guy in this 4-game stretch, and what a time for him to get hot. Let's hope it continues. Also, I mentioned Chris Ledlam in the last game. Ledlam this game, 19 points, 8 rebounds, 8 of 11 from the field. He had another great game. He in this past 4-game hot winning streak, 12 points per game, 5.5 rebounds per game, and 2 blocks per game, because he also had 2 blocks against DePaul, and he had 3 steals. So those two guys, they didn't come in as hot necessarily as we thought they were going to at the start of the season, but they're paying off now. I mean, these are the guys that we kind of advertised have gotten back now, and what a time to get it. Let's just hope it continues, because having a third guy in Dingle to go with Soriano and Jenkins, again, would be huge and really puts this team in the flow with guys like Glenn Taylor on defense and Ledlam playing the way he's playing. You know, we would be a team a lot of people would not want to see in the tournament.
All the pieces are finally coming together.
Well, again, Rick Pitino's teams take time, right? That's always been the mantra. They take time to build together. This team may have needed an extra kick in the ass, and Rick Pitino was certainly willing to give it to him. but it has worked.
They may lack lateral quickness, but since lateral quickness was deemed as a non-factor for us, we've decided to strictly go north and south and just continue going north in the rankings.
That's it. We're heading in the right direction. Again, even that DePaul win got us four point increase in the net, which you love to see. All right, we got one game left. It's Saturday. This game is going to be at the one, the only Madison Square Garden. It'll be Ed Cooley's first visit as the head coach of the Georgetown Hoyas. Boo. You suck. That game at noon. Terrible. Terrible. Hate noon games, but on Fox. New games are fine, I guess, on Saturday, but I'm not a big fan. We tend to not play well.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. Let's take a look back at our last game against Georgetown just 2 weeks ago. A little bit scary, a 90-85 win against the Hoyas, and you kind of felt this was after Rick Pitino had come out and said all this stuff.
It was the first game after,
and it was a good win, but you did kind of feel like we only won because we were just better than them enough to hold on. At least that's the sense I got from watching this game.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But you look at the numbers, right? Glenn Taylor had 0 points. He played 6 minutes. Very different Glenn Taylor playing in games now. Even look at Dingle. He crushed it that game. So he was where he was supposed to be. But I think this team is a different team. So my hope is that the results reflect that and we come out and win the way we should have against Georgetown the first time.
I think we need to, and I think it's important for us to do that to continue to show the committee and the nation at large of that we're a different team now. We also need to keep our metrics up, and by winning by a lot is important. But we need to win. Obviously, that's a one.
Very key.
Very key. But ideally, we would win by a good margin because we do need to keep that those numbers up.
Yeah, not obviously just winning is a good nugget, but I – this is a Georgetown team who has not been very successful. This is, you know, a Georgetown team that is locked in the 10 spot. A loss here is probably devastating to our NCAA tournament hopes. And not to mention probably drops us in the seeding in the Big East tournament.
We can't lose to Georgetown.
Yeah, no.
Not at home. I mean, certainly not at home. It should be a good – hopefully it's a good crowd. Rick Pitino said we'll find out a lot about Johnny's fans about showing up on Saturday, which I think will be a very – I think the momentum will be big. I think it'll be a big red crowd, which would be great.
That's good. Rick Pitino has kind of put St. John's fans on notice. He said, I want you guys to come out. I want you to be loud. It's the last game of the year. It's an important game.
It's a rivalry game.
It is a rivalry game, but it's even though Georgetown's not good, it's got a little extra juice for us. So come out, be loud, and you know, support our guys. Get us to that 19 win line, and give us the real shot at making sure we're on the right side of the bubble come Selection Sunday.
Yeah, the only thing, again, we should beat them. We're just a better team than them. We showed that last time, even though we were scared, like you said. But the only thing is, I just worry Ed Cooley is going to try to get his team up for this game because, you know, it's right before the Big East tournament. It's the last game of the season at MSG, all that fun stuff.
And he's Ed Cooley.
He's Ed Cooley, and he doesn't like St. John's, and it's a rivalry game.
He's an asshole.
Yeah, fair. But yeah, that's the only thing.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that is certainly the fear. And again, he did a good coaching job at Providence, so he certainly shows that he can win with teams. And you know, you did mention Georgetown having that run when they were down at the bottom of the Big East, and they went out and won the Big East tournament under Ewing. Yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen. Let's hope it doesn't start with a win against us. Is all we can say. All right. So even though we've got one game left this week, we're going to do our spotlight player of the week based on the Butler and DePaul games. It's not a normal week, but it's how we covered it so that way we could get this, you know, last game episode going. So looking at that, Craig, who do you got as the spotlight player of the week for the Butler and DePaul game?
I can't do two.
Craig, it's been three seasons. It's been 18 weeks. at this point, I just kind of expect you to say five names and hope that at least one of them at the end you go, I think this guy is my number one.
So for my spotlight player this week, I'm going to go with Jordan Dingle. I think that his confidence and that his scoring ability has really turned a corner, as we talked about a little bit before. And I think that's been super important for us. And I think it's that's why I go with Jordan Dingle this week.
All right. Fair enough. Tim, who's your spotlight player?
I really wanted to go with Glenn Taylor just because not many times I get to shout out another Taylor as a junior. So that was disappointing that he dropped zero in that game. He did get a block and a steal, but it's great defense. But yeah, I got to go with Jordan Dingle. Jordan Dingle also, besides scoring efficiently, he stepped up and helped run the point with Sim when Jenkins got in foul trouble and no steps were missed. So stepping up into helping Sim run the point, I think that was big. And you don't know what's going to happen in the conference tournament. Jenkins could get three fouls in the first 5 minutes, just in pure chaos. And now we know those two can run together now. So it's good to know.
Fair point. All right, two votes for Jordan Dingle. Nick, I'll let you go before I go, because depending on who you vote for, this thing may be over.
Ooh. It's not going to be over because I am not going to go with Dingle. I am going to go with RJ Lewis. I think RJ Lewis came off the bench in both games very efficiently and very productively. There is certain times in the DePaul game when he was very haphazardly running around the court and he needed to be taken out for a minute. But outside of that, like 2-3 minute stint, I think he came in off the bench, really brought a lot of energy. Was a very good spark plug, is very talented, needs to refine it for sure. And he has been throughout the season, but I think he showed that he can be very, very, very solid off the bench and bring a lot of energy. So all right. That's why in the last two games, yeah.
I think those are very valid points, Nick, and I couldn't agree with you more that RJ Lewis is absolutely not the spotlight player of the week. It's Jordan Dingle. Come on, Nick. What are you doing? Guy shot 80% from the field in the DePaul game, had 19 points, 6 assists. Just spectacular. 3 of 4 from three. Also against Butler, he shot 57%. He was 4 of 7. 9 points, 3 steals for him. RJ Lewis certainly gets a shout out because he did have 2 great games. But this week's spotlight player of the week is Jordan Dingle. Craig, how many is that for Jordan Dingle?
2.
All right. Who leads at the end of this? We got one more game. Remember, one more spotlight player of the week, Craig. Who's in the lead?
Dennis Jenkins.
Are you positive?
How many?
No, you're not. You know why? Because you didn't do your job, Craig. You were supposed to keep count, and what did you not do? You didn't keep count.
It's all up here. No, it's all idea. In my head. It's all
you
in my
no
head.
No idea who's the leader. Now Jenkins, you have to go back and count.
Jenkins has, I think, 3.
You, I don't want to hear your pity. I don't want to hear pity guesses.
Millions.
I don't want to hear it.
We pay you millions for nothing. That's,
I know. I, you know, he's going to next year tell you, well, I think Rick Pitino's conference is up there because it has 1. Do your job, Craig. Do your job. All right. Well, we'll have to figure it out next week. After the last game, we'll have a spotlight player of the week, and we'll say who the overall spotlight player of the week is if Craig can figure out how to count without using his fingers and toes. That'll do it for this week. For Craig, Tim, and Nick, I'm Vincent. Go Johnnies. Keep chasing.